Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your humble host, Ray Graff. It's our pets, well, not so humble all the time. It's our pets and vets show, don't you know? And here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. Now, the number to call with your pet question, 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Now, if you are submitting your question in written form, try to provide as much info as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, and otherwise just call us, 1-800-348-2551. Carrie, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
It's a nice kind of a drab day to do radio, huh?
Yes. It was a good day to can tomatoes, though, which was what I did all
morning. Oh, really? Oh, that's nice. Didn't know that was one of your skills. You're running in a race, too, huh?
Yes. So when I'm not doing my veterinary thing, one of my big side things is I run half marathons.
Really?
For the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Yeah.
And I used to do full marathons, but had knee surgery, so now I'm cut down to halves.
So 13 miles is it?
That's good. 13.
Yeah, that's a
13.
Lot.
We say half the distance, twice the fun.
I can barely drive 13 miles. That's pretty good.
So I just recently signed up. I found out, unfortunately, that one of my parents' dearest friends, my childhood dentist growing up, was just diagnosed with multiple myeloma.
Oh.
So in Tom's honor, I've signed up to do the Disney half.
Good for you.
I also run in honor of my patients. So I don't know if a lot of people are aware, lymphoma is one of the most common cancers that we see in pets.
Really?
And we use mostly human medications to treat them.
So they get chemo and everything else?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Lymphoma is very chemotherapy responsive. And the dogs do amazingly. Dogs and cats do amazingly well. I have a cat right now, Bert. I have been treating for 2 years with lymphocytic leukemia. We thought he would only make it a couple of months, and he's 2.5 years out.
Oh, that's great.
Starting to struggle a little bit, but he's been a champ. And he hasn't, you know, they don't miss a beat, the animals. They don't lose their hair. They don't get violently ill like people do. So, you know, we had a client who took his dog hiking every weekend all through the chemotherapy.
Wow.
And, you know, so it's...
Well, that's really nice.
I figure anything I can do to advance the, you know, the knowledge of treating cancer will help both my patients and the humans that I run for.
That's a nice thing, Carrie O'Loughlin. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Ali in Canaan, Connecticut.
Hi. Wow. Thank you so much. So I have a little purebred mutt. She's 14, part Brussels, part Maltese. And recently, the only way I can describe it is she's wheezing. So, she'll be walking or running, and all of a sudden, it's as though she has like a doggy asthma attack. It'll just be once or twice. And she'll do it sometimes when she's not even that active. And I just want to know, should I be concerned? Is this something? We've moved recently from California to the Berkshires, and obviously the temperature change is pretty drastic. So I just wanted to know if you have any thoughts on what this is. Should I see that?
Is asthma a possibility?
Well, asthma is, you know, certainly moving to a new environment. You know, at the age of 14 years old, you said.
Yeah.
Which
she's a young 14.
Yeah, a 14 is great. But it would be unusual for a 14-year-old to develop allergies. But if this is a brand new environment, and certainly California to New York, she could be experiencing things she's never had before. So it could possibly be allergies. And I would say this fall... the allergies have been pretty bad. We've
really
had a lot of animals, you know, with wheezing and coughing and other issues. One thing it might be what you're hearing is actually what's called a reverse sneeze.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dog will suddenly, it's a quick intake of breath and then a quick sort of hack, and I can do it in person, but I don't even want to try and
no,
do it on
please
the
don't. Yeah,
try
fine.
And do it on the radio. Yeah, it probably wouldn't sound right. But if you Google reverse sneeze on YouTube, you can see videos of it. If it's a reverse sneeze, it's basically a tickle in the back of the throat, and okay. often antihistamines will help.
Okay.
And you could, you know, check with your veterinarian about the certain dosages, but you can use most of the over-the-counter antihistamines on dogs.
You mean people
human,
antihistamines?
Human antihistamines.
Wow.
Yep. But, you know, I would talk to your vet and certainly have the dog checked out. At 14, you want to make sure there aren't other things going on. But it could be something as simple as a little allergy.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much.
Thanks for the call. So how would you do a dosage for a pet?
Oh, they have the different antihistamines. We have dosages. You know, at our practice, we have a printout that we can give our clients that have all the over-the-counter antihistamine doses for the different weights of the animals.
So now let's say a Benadryl, usually it's in pill form. I guess you can get liquid, but how would you
Well, actually, believe it or not, dogs take way more Benadryl than humans do.
Really?
Yes.
But how?
Yep.
You don't give them pills.
Yeah, usually the pills.
Really?
Yep, because, you know, it's a milligram per pound. So a 25-pound dog takes an adult dose of Benadryl.
But what I'm saying is, how do you get a dog to swallow a pill?
Oh, easy. Usually peanut butter, cream cheese.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cats, much more difficult.
Yeah, so with most things. Anne in Plainfield, Mass. You're on, Anne.
Hello. I have a golden retriever. He's almost 3 years old. He's going to take another couple of years to fully develop. He hasn't developed the spring of the rib and the chest and so forth. And he also has weak pasterns. And I've heard that vitamin C will help strengthen them, but they tell me that's more in puppies. Can you give me any ideas? Do you think it might work? And if so, how much and how do I give it?
Yeah, at 3 years old, pretty much the bony structures and everything are formed. You're not going to change anything with the bones at this point.
Right.
If he's got weakness in his tendons or his ligaments, I don't know that vitamin C, I mean, you can hurt a dog by giving too much vitamin C, but I don't know that, you know, giving a single dose of vitamin C every day is going to hurt. I just don't know that it'll help that much.
Right.
I would be more, you know, making sure he's on a really good quality diet and getting regular exercise. That's going to, you know, strengthen him more than anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That was my main question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ann. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. It's our Pets and Vets show for the month of October, which is almost done. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. The show's not done. The month is almost done.
Hard
it's really
believe.
Yeah, we're heading to winter so fast.
We're getting ready for our annual Del Mar Animal Hospital pumpkin contest.
Oh yeah, now what's that all about?
On Friday, every employee decorates a pumpkin, and everyone who comes in that day can vote.
Nice.
And anyone who wants to see can go to the DelmarAnimalHospital.com website.
Oh, cool.
And they can vote online, although we don't count the votes online towards prizes because we've had some ballot stuffing on the online voting in the past.
What, do you win a cat or something?
Oh, no. You usually get like a gift card to
something. That's nice. Oh, wow. Pretty highfalutin stuff. Let's go to Ginny in Voorheesville. Ginny.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, doctor. We had your services at your hospital for 9 years with our English bulldog, and
oh,
the guys were wonderful to us. She passed away.
Oh.
I got a cat. I took him, a stray cat, very nice cat. I've had her about 2 years, and our dog passed away last summer, and I feel like the cat's lonely or someone like her. And I'm not sure. I'm like, is it a good thing or a bad thing to get her another cat friend? Because now she's about 4 years old, but she's still, you know, she's playful. I don't know whether to get male, female, whether to do it or not, or maybe she's half. I mean,
that's always a tricky thing.
Yeah. So are you thinking about getting another cat or getting another dog?
Well, another cat for right now, for her, to have one of her own kind. But you know, I'm like, oh, gosh, what if I do? And then she's not happy about it.
Yes.
Exactly. It can be tricky. I would say, you know, some cats that have lived on their own as a cat don't necessarily take kindly to introducing a new cat, females especially. So if you were going to do it, I would actually recommend getting a pair of kittens. That way Well, because that way, A, if she hates them, they have each other to play with.
Oh. Yeah.
And, you know, the poor kitten won't be forced to play with her.
Right.
And B, sometimes kittens, an adult cat will accept more quickly than another adult.
Okay.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're getting to the end of kitten season, so it may be waiting until spring.
Ginny, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a break here. 1-800-348-2551. I'm going to find out what, in fact, kitten season is, and we'll do that in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. The Whistling Kettle, featuring Tea of the Month Club's Tea Discovery, Wellness Tea, Herbal and Caffeine-Free Tea, and more. TheWhistlingKettle.com for catalog and online ordering. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony, offering a new musically-themed Sunday brunch. RealSeafoodCo.com/brunch for menu. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It is Pets and Vets today with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital. All right, before we get back to the phones, who knew there was a kitten season? What's that all about?
So cats are what are considered seasonal breeders. So,
really?
Yes, I guess back, you know, way back when, historically, they were smart enough to know not to have kittens in the middle of winter.
Huh.
So cats will start coming into heat as the days get longer. And so they will start, you know, after Christmas, they will start coming into heat, so the kittens would be born, you know, late February, beginning of March. And then they will come in and out of heat all summer long, and then as the days get shorter, they stop.
Wow. Okay, so how long does it take for a little baby kitty to be born?
About 2 months.
2 months?
63 days.
And is it
same as a dog.
Is it common to have, do they have more than one in a litter?
Usually.
Yeah?
Yes. So, that's why they have litters.
Oh, yeah. What's the max?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I would say most cats, maybe six.
Really?
Six or seven would be a pretty good size litter. I would say 3 to 4 on average.
Okay. So it's not like trout season or something like that?
No.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. And Bob in Granville. Bob, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have a quick question about, I have two Yorkies. One eats very well. The other one will eat for like 3 days, and then for 2 days, doesn't eat at all. Or eats very little. Did you ever come across anything like that?
Now, the one that doesn't eat very well for you, is normal weight?
No, he's probably underweight.
Okay.
Like I could feel his ribs and everything.
And how old?
About 5.
Okay. Does everything else seem to be working fine? Is he having normal stools?
He has normal stools.
Urine and all that?
Right.
Okay.
He doesn't urinate around the house. He doesn't defecate.
Right. Well, I mean, it could be normal for him. I mean, he could just be one of these dogs that eats to live and doesn't live to eat, as I like to say. Mm. But there also could be an issue that's causing him to have intermittent stomach complaints. So, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have him checked out. You know, dogs can have things like ulcers and gastric reflux and things like that that can cause their appetite to decrease. Mm. So you definitely want to rule all that out.
Yeah.
But if his, you know, if he's holding his weight stable, even if he's on the thin side, he may just be one of these dogs that, you know, knows when he's hungry and only eats when he has to.
Yeah, when he does eat, I give them both wet food and dry food.
Right.
The dry food afterwards to clean their teeth.
Okay.
Sometimes he'll eat both.
Right.
Twice a day or three times a day. And then we'll do the same the next day. And the day after that, he'll just eat part of the wet food, and that's it.
Huh. Well.
And drinks a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, it would be good to rule out, you know, some of the diseases that can make dogs have a bad appetite. You know, it'd be easy enough to do a couple of simple blood tests and look at his urine and make sure everything's okay. And then if that is, that may just be his normal eating pattern.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Jim in Skodak. Jim, you're on.
Hi. My dog has problems with her anal glands. She's about 5 years old. We tried, the vet recommended pumpkin, and we give her some wheat bread, stuff like that, but nothing seems to help. And he had talked about removing them. And I went online, and I saw there was a lot of side effects, supposedly, from this. And I was wondering your opinion about having them removed.
So, yeah, anal gland removal is not something that is tend to, you know, be done on a light basis.
It's not like removing tonsils or something.
Right. It's a fairly major surgery. I've only had a couple of patients that have needed it done over the years, and it was usually because of chronic infection that could not be cleared up. Or I had a cat that had a cancerous one. If this is just, you know, the dog needs to have its anal glands emptied frequently, I would not be removing anal glands because of that. I mean, there's certainly a lot of other things that can be done. You know, a lot of anal gland issues have to do with allergies. So you want to, you know, pursue that basis.
The dog takes Benadryl for her allergies.
Right.
She has a lot of allergies. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, and anal glands can get stopped up because of allergies. You know, the skin gets a little inflamed and warm when the allergies are flaring, and that can close off those openings to the anal glands, so they get clogged up. So I would deal with the allergies first before I ever thought about taking the anal glands out.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Over to Dan and Troy. Dan, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I got a question about a cat that I have with asthma, or at least it was diagnosed with asthma. It's we adopted two cats 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago, and the male, after we moved about a year ago, suddenly developed what looked like asthma. It was very difficult to diagnose. But actually, we diagnosed it by looking at a YouTube video and saw the cat heaving in a way that looked like asthma. We took it to the doctor, and they put it on a steroid, initially a liquid one, which I understand has a greater effect on the cat's liver. So they suggested what we get an aerator and a pump, which that was fun trying to get the cat to put its nose. But we finally did, and he does it most of the time. But I heard the doctor mention earlier that we're having a tremendous amount, those are my words, not hers, of an allergy season. And just recently, the cat seems to be having more what I would think asthma attacks. But I'm wondering if it might be more related to an allergy than it is to asthma.
Okay.
And I know that's a complicated question, but I'll shut up now.
Yep. So... Honestly, asthma is, in cats, is, as far as I'm concerned, almost always allergic in basis.
Mm.
Now, it depends on what they're allergic to. So certainly if your cat is worse this season, it wouldn't surprise me. And the inhaled steroids that you're using and other inhaled medications, definitely, if you can do that, are the way to go, because it's going to cause less long-term side effects. And if you need to use it more frequently over the short course to get through this season until all the leaves are off the trees and everything, then I would go for it. So,
is there a way of diagnosing what the cat's allergic to?
You can do blood testing.
Right.
They need to be off of steroids for a while in order for the test to be accurate. Which can be tough with the asthmatics. And generally, I'd have to look into that. We do immunotherapy for dogs and cats that have skin allergies. I don't know that I've ever heard of anyone doing it for an asthmatic cat, where you're basically injecting them with what they're allergic to. I guess the concern would be is you could really throw them into a major asthma attack,
yeah.
And that would be bad. So.
Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Our guest today is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital. Yes, you may have surmised, it's Pets and Vets today. Number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Donald in Cold Spring. Donald.
Yeah, hello. I'm calling about my dog. She's a farm dog. We live on a 225-acre farm. But see, she just turned 3 years old. When she turned one, I wasn't surprised for the vet to tell me this, but she was diagnosed with giardia.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go through the treatment because I just knew that she was going to get giardia over and over and over. So I just monitored her stool and her body condition, and she grew great, and she's full of, you know, she's quite sprightly at this point in time. And I was wondering if animals are able to just live with giardia, kind of like, small ruminants, they're able to live with, like, barber pole, or if it's something that could become more of a concern.
All right, tell us what it is first.
Oh, so giardia is a waterborne parasite.
Okay.
And so you pick it up. That's one of the reasons why you're not supposed to drink out of, you know, streams and all that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, I think a lot of animals probably live fine with giardia. It's hard to find. So, you know, if you happen to find it on a stool sample, yay, you know, because it's not easy to see. In my mind, if the dog is not having problems, I probably wouldn't worry about it. And I think you're right.
Yeah.
If you live on a farm, there's chances are you could treat the dog and they could go out the next day and drink out of a puddle and get it all over again.
Exactly. No, I thought it was pretty funny because the vet that we had gone to was pretty close to New York City. It was in Scarsdale. So, you know, he had suggested, doing the Ivermec treatment, but also possibly muzzling the dog. And it's just like, I'm not going to muzzle a farm dog. You know, it's like 225 acres. We live right next to a creek. Of course she's going to jump in the creek.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And there's also, I would also think there's a chance that her immune system, you know, may develop enough immunity against it that, you know, whatever, she doesn't care about it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks. I appreciate the help.
No problem.
Thanks, Donald. So what are the symptoms?
Generally diarrhea.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to Pamela in Troy. Pamela, you're on.
Good afternoon. I can probably help that lady who was thinking about getting kittens. Actually, my question is, about 3 weeks ago, acquired 3 feral kittens that I had found in the neighborhood. And with it being getting into the colder weather, I just kind of hated to leave them to run wild. But now I need to find homes for them, and I just am at my wit's end how to do that.
Mm.
So how old are these little kittens?
Probably about 8 weeks, I'm going to guess, at this point.
Okay. Well, there are certainly a number of organizations in this area.
I've called most of them.
And
they're all full.
Ah.
Or they don't take ferals.
So these kittens at 8 weeks, I mean, they may be feral at the moment, but they should be able to be, you know, made non-feral at this point. You tried the shelters and kitten angels?
I've called people. Many of them just don't even give me a call back.
Yeah.
That's a tough one because generally, if the kittens are young enough, even if they were feral, if you handle them enough, they can easily be turned around and made into lovely house, you know, cats.
I did that 5 years ago with 2 others, and I have a 17 going on 18-year-old senior cat, and I have a full-time job, and I have a pretty full activities after work, and so I don't have the time or the resources to take on any more. I don't hate to leave them running the streets.
Exactly. Well, the only other thing I could say would be to, you know, put up signs, you know, kittens good to a, you know, free to a good home type of thing, or contact one of these agencies and see if they can put you on a list. Sometimes they'll have lists where if people call looking for kittens, even if they don't have room in their shelters, they can give you, you know, give out your phone number.
Thanks, Pamela. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop Pets and Vets with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. And let's go to Sue in Ballston Spa. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm asking, calling about generic alternatives to some of the heart protection medicine like HeartGuard, and also I'm asking about generic alternatives to things like Canine Advantix too. I asked my vet, and she seemed not to know about anything about those things, but at my local pharmacy, they do, in fact, sell alternatives to HeartGuard, which are a lot less expensive, and it's the generic version. And I last year, I picked up a VetGuard Plus instead of the Canine Advantix 2 because it was less than half price. And so I'm wondering about the generic alternatives. Do you know about these? Are they as good as, for animals?
Yeah, so Sue, I would say as far as the generic heartworm protection, I think that would probably be fine. The drugs are usually similar. It's, the base of HeartGuard is a drug called ivermectin. So if it's got ivermectin in it, it's going to do the job. It may have different flavorings. The generic flea and tick medicines I have more of a problem with. I have seen issues with them not being as effective.
Huh.
And I think it has more to do with the carrier agent. You know, it's the way that these topical medications spread out over the animal's skin.
Oh, okay.
I've definitely had people call with complaints about still having flea and tick issues using the generics. So I think with flea and tick medicine, it's definitely you get what you pay for as far as your effectiveness.
Because I did use it, and he's had no problems at all.
Yeah, it's
kind of more concerned that he'll have some side effects, but he didn't have any of those either.
Right, so. Right. And if it works for you, great. I mean, it depends on the fleas and stuff in your area. Some are tougher than others. So if it's working for you, great. But if you use it and you're still seeing problems, then, you need to make the jump.
Switch back.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that help. Thank you. You have a good day now.
You too.
Thanks, Sue. We appreciate it. This one, sort of like that one. This is via email. Is there really any difference between frontline-type treatments for dogs and cats? How do the fleas know? The package says do not use on cats, the dog treatment, that is. Why can't I buy a treatment for a big dog and use it on my three cats?
Oh, that's a very important one. When it says do not use on cats, there is a big reason.
Why
and
is
it's
that?
And it's not the front line so much, but some of the other flea and tick products have a repellent in it that's a permethrin. The drug is a permethrin, and that is extremely toxic to cats.
Huh.
If you put it on the cat will have seizures.
Wow.
For days potentially, and it can kill them.
Okay,
says do not use on cats, do not use on cats. And in fact, I don't even like to have people that have cats and dogs in the same house use it on their dog unless they know that the cat absolutely hates the dog. Because if you put it on the dog and it's still damp on the dog and the cat rubs up against the dog, I have a cat that rubs up against my lab all the time. So if I used it on that, my cat could go into seizures.
Wow. And so how is it that it can be so effective with minimal side effects for a dog and be so dangerous for a cat?
Cats are not small dogs. Their livers work differently, so they can't handle certain things the way dogs can.
All right, over to Dinah, or is it Dina in Scotia?
Dina.
Hi, Dina, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a five-year-old dog who's had this persistent ear problem. I don't know if it's an infection or a yeast infection or... I'm getting different feedback from one vet and then my vet and then the breeder. Her ear gets really gunky, and I wipe it out with a vet liquid, and then I put in drops, and that seems to help it. But then within a few weeks, she's got very hairy ear. She's a standard poodle. Just this one ear gets really gunky, and someone said to me that it's got to do with the food you're feeding her. It's a food allergy, and someone else said that no, it has nothing to do with that. You could probably give her a course of antibiotics, and she'll be fine. So I'm kind of perplexed.
So
about what to do?
Yes, persistent or recurrent ear infections are very, very common in dogs, and they are almost always allergy related.
Huh.
So if it's a seasonal problem, then we think more of seasonal allergies, either outdoor allergies in the summertime or indoor allergies in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. If it goes all throughout the year, then we start to think about food. Now, some dogs have both indoor and outdoor allergies, so it can be year-round, so that's a little confusing. But if you have an animal that has ear issues throughout the year, then we really do start to think about food allergies.
Gotcha.
And there's a whole procedure to go through with dealing with that, but you could definitely talk to your vet about that. But I would talk to your vet.
All right, Dina, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets with Ray Graff. We're joined today by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital, and we will be back with your calls, more of them anyway, coming up.
Support for WMT comes from Bodhi Spa Yoga and Salon Hudson, with fall facials using Diamond Tome and Hydro Wand technology and Naturopathica Holistic Skincare products. Open daily, BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements. Noble-Home.net. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorns Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Bard Academy at Simon's Rock, Great Barrington. A 2-year boarding and day school working to prepare students to enter college early. Hosting an open house Friday, November 6th, simons-rock.edu. And the Arthur Zenkel Music Center at Skidmore College, celebrating its 5th anniversary with founder of Sweet Honey and the Rock, Bernice Johnson Reagan and Toshi Reagan, November 13th at 8 p.m. skidmore.edu/ZANKEL.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us today on our Pets and Vets edition for the month of October. And before we get back to the phones, Carrie, this one is via email from Yvette. My 15-year-old spayed female cat has kidney issues. We gave her 150 milliliters subcutaneous fluids every other day. She eats her canned food, a mostly renal diet, well, and plays and is quite a happy little cat. My vet has told me about Azodil, and I'm wondering if the stress to her of pilling her twice a day is worth the benefit of using this product. I didn't know pilling was a verb, but that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, we do use that in cats.
Okay.
Pilling a cat. If you could find a way of getting the medication into the cat in the least stressful way possible, via, you know, they have all these treats now that can be used, you know, gosh, it just went right out of my head. The pill poppers and things to hide.
Really?
Yes, to hide.
They're food items that you put
in? Put the pill in and
secret compartment?
Sometimes it works. Cats are pretty tough. Sometimes they'll eat. I had a cat that was on heart medication, and I could use hairball pounce treats that were hard on the outside and soft on the inside, and he would scarf them up and didn't even care that there was medicine in it. But if they bite into it and they get a taste of the medicine, then sometimes they won't do it. So Azodil will help decrease some of the kidney values in a cat. I believe they also had an Azodil powder, but I might be mistaken, that you could just mix in the food. So that would be something else to look into.
All right, back to the phones, and Chris in Chalmont. Chris, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about an older cat. She's between 17 and 19, who had a blood clot in one of her legs a week ago. It's kind of mixed up with, I was actually at the bottom of the stairs when she had it. So on top of having the blood clot, I don't know if that happened first, but she fell down the stairs. And at that point, I realized she had no use of her back legs. So brought her to the vet, and clearly one paw, back paw, was completely cold to the touch. So it was only in one back leg. So at the vet, at that examination, she also got loose and fell again on the floor. So that was two falls and a blood clot. And so, you know, I wanted to give her a shot. And so, the other issue is generally she's a very calm cat, never had any issue biting or scratching in all of those years. She did bite the vet tech because I'm sure she was totally panicked. So he put her on heparin, which I guess is a, you know, a blood clot dissolver, and she was also on Buprenex. At this point, she's on nothing. This is a week later. She's now drinking on her own. She'll get up to drink, eating again. The paw is warm to the touch, but the pad on that foot, instead of being pink, is more red and a little hard. So basically, I'm just wondering, I know nothing about this issue at all, and I'm just wondering, she's happy, purring, content, but I'm wondering kind of what to do for her, if anything, and what the prognosis is for something like that.
So did they say anything about her heart?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
And I know it's pretty much heart-related, and from what I've read online, it could happen again. You know, I think the thing, if it had been both feet, I would have, you know, euthanized her because it would have felt a little too hopeless. At this point, she clearly, going to the vets is really, really stressful. I don't know. I kind of think he thought she wouldn't make it this far, maybe. But again, she's back to eating on her own. She kind of manages that foot in terms of kind of dragging it back in. So clearly, things are looking up for her. But again, I'm not sure what the next step is. Right. And you're right about the heart thing.
Yeah. So, you know, when you have a kitty of her age, you know, it's sort of a toss-up of how much do you want to stress the cat versus,
yes.
You know, we're putting her through a major workup.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the blood clots are because there's a problem with her heart.
Okay.
And by the time it gets to the point of them throwing blood clots,
mm-hmm.
her long-term prognosis is probably not great.
Okay.
And she is at high risk for having this happen again.
Ooh, okay.
Certainly one thing that you could do at home that would be fairly simple would be to give her a half of a baby aspirin every 3 days.
Oh, okay.
And that would help decrease her chances of clotting again.
Mm-hmm.
The leg is going to come back as much as it's going to come back. The body's mm-hmm. going to make new, you know, vessels around that clot, find mm-hmm. new ways of getting blood to her foot, which it sounds like it's already doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the pain has subsided.
Yes.
Generally, these blood clots are, it's very painful to have the blood cut off to your leg.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the times we end up putting these cats to sleep more because they're in such god-awful distress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the Buprenex is a pain reliever.
Okay.
And if she's still acting at all painful, you can have the Buprenex formulated into an oral form that you can give at home.
Okay.
So that's another thing to consider
if
you don't want to do a full workup.
I was looking for a generic, and because the Buprenex cannot be made generic, but it was a lot cheaper to get a generic pain med, not from the vet directly. She doesn't seem to be in pain, but, she's not clearly not moving around, and I don't know if I should encourage her or just let her heal at her own pace.
I would let her heal at her own pace.
Okay.
Don't force her.
So the pad being red on the bottom, is that and a little harder, is that, and the foot is completely as warm as the other. So clearly something's happening. I was just wondering why it got red rather than pink.
Well, it may have been damaged by the loss of blood flow.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the question is it going to heal or is it going to, die off,
yeah.
which is the scary part.
And time will tell. Okay, and how much would there be a sign that, it's dying off? Or?
Well, I think if she stops using the leg or uses it less and less rather than more and more.
Well, I have her in an enclosure where it's big enough for her to feel comfy, get up, go to the bathroom. It's like screened in.
Yeah.
And so yesterday I left the room and I left the door open and she was on a chair.
Good.
So clearly, okay. And today she got up to drink. So clearly I can see improvement. But she's kind of a lazy fat thing. So if she doesn't have to use it, she's not one of those cats that would say, okay, I want to get out of here. I'm going to put some weight on both feet.
Yeah. But generally, cats that are moving around and eating
yes.
are generally not terribly unhappy.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. It's Vox Pop. It is Pets and Vets Today. Colleen in Albany. Colleen, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 9-year-old female Labrador dog who had her back right leg amputated in January and has had a pretty bad run of arthritis as well as itching and other things since then. She's doing all the supplements and the Prevacox for pain. We recently started her on acupuncture and on laser therapy. I'm beginning to think she should be a spa dog, but I'm just wondering, is the laser therapy, my other dog died of cancer, so now I've got it in my head that this dog, if she has cancer cells in her and supposedly laser therapy is supposed to stimulate cell growth, is that going to also help cancer cells, or are they a totally different ballgame?
I don't personally have a laser. We did have someone come and talk to us at one point, and my understanding is it more increases blood flow to the areas to help with healing. Did the dog have bone cancer? Is that why the leg was amputated?
No, she had a benign tumor that wouldn't heal.
Ah.
After they removed it, the skin around it just wasn't healing right,
gotcha.
And we ultimately lost the leg.
Okay. I don't think the laser therapy is going to be harmful in terms of cancer. If it was a tumor that you worried about regrowing and you didn't want to increase blood flow to that area, maybe, but... I think
that
just for general healing, I think it seems to work quite well for a lot of dogs. So.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Colleen. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. And Layla in Mount Shremper, or is it Lila?
Layla, that's right. Thanks, Ray.
You're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a comment relating to the guy with the two Yorkies, one who was eating well and one wasn't. I had two dogs. I still have one of them. It was the same way. One would, he lived to eat, and he would just gobble everything up, and the other would go eagerly to her dish and then kind of sniff at it and pick her way through it and so forth. People said, German Shepherds are picky, and, you know, the other dog's a lab mix, and that explains it. Well, it turns out a couple of years later, she started developing the picky eater, quote, boils and hot spots and started chewing on herself, and it turns out she was allergic to grain.
Huh.
And when I took all grain out of her diet, her coat cleared up, everything cleared up, her intermittent diarrhea, which I just described to, well, she got into something, she got into the compost pile, or she, you know, all of that cleared up, and she's got a gorgeous coat these days. She's doing great. Buddy, the first dog lived to be 16, and she's now coming up on 14.
Wow, great. Yeah, food allergies definitely can be very sneaky. You know, dogs don't jump up and say, you know, my food is bothering me. But definitely any time that you have a coat issues and GI or intestinal issues at the same time, definitely food allergies are something to consider.
It's funny too when you say that. I mean, I'm probably anthropomorphizing all over the place, but German Shepherds are really smart, and she would go to her dish and she'd sort of look at it and she'd look at me like, really? And I'd be like, oh, come on, Daisy, eat your food, you know. And so she'd like, okay, but she knew. I mean, I don't think dogs are picky just to be picky. They know it's not going to be good for them.
Yeah, I did that once with my dog, and it turned out the food had gone rancid.
Ah.
I kept saying, eat your food, you know, and then I finally sniffed it and went, oh, okay.
Oh, good.
Ooh.
Wonder.
So. Well, thanks, Layla. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. What percentage do you think of dogs have allergies?
Allergies of all kinds?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I'd say close to 25%.
Really?
We see a ton of allergic dogs.
All right, let's go to Janet in Kerhonkson. Janet.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I have a suggestion for the lady who called to adopt out the kittens.
Okay.
I've always had success putting a funny ad in the local paper, like two terrible tigers or little black bears. And also, I have a funny story. Two of my cats were cleaning each other's faces the other day, and their tongues got stuck together.
Oh. Wow.
And I wonder if that was the inspiration for the invention of Velcro.
I don't know. I was thinking just like Velcro. That's pretty
tongue. Okay, I'll let you go.
Thanks, Janet. We appreciate it. Sassy in Schenectady? I'm sorry.
Susie.
All right. Well, I'll call you Sassy anyway. You're on.
You can if you want to. Thanks so much for taking my call. We have an 8-week-old puppy. She's a mashi mixed between a Maltese and a Shih Tzu. And we've never had a dog before. And I feel like I did everything wrong. Like I called an ad in the paper, and it turns out it was like a backyard breeder, and she wasn't a really responsible person. And so this poor little dog has like just flea infested and worms, although everybody I talk to says, oh, all puppies have worms. So I don't know if that's true. But so she's 8 weeks tomorrow, and her fleas are pretty bad, and we've been trying to bathe her and comb her and get rid of them all, but we can't get rid of them all. And so our vet, who I love, gave us some of the topical flea medicine. And I was going to, he said, wait until she's 8 weeks and then put it on her. And so I've been waiting, and that's tomorrow. And then I'm talking to other friends of mine who have dogs. And again, we've never had one. And they're like, oh, don't use that. It's so toxic. It's poisonous. All her hair is going to fall out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, the vet gave it to me. So I'm just calling to see what I should do, because I don't want the fleas and I want her to be well, but I'm conflicted as to what to do.
Okay.
I would listen to your vet. Don't listen to your friends. No, the topical flea products, especially the ones you get from your vet, are very, very safe. They don't get absorbed into the animal system. They just stay on the outside. The fleas in an eight-week-old puppy are way more harmful than anything you're going to put on that dog. So you want to get rid of the fleas. So
okay, and like they were saying, all her hair is going to fall out.
No.
Just horror stories. I'm like, this is our little baby. And
if she stays infested with fleas, she's much more likely to have all her hair fall
That's
out
a good point.
Than if you put something on her back.
Okay.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Sassy Susie. We appreciate it. Over to Beth in Cairo. You're on.
Oh, hi. I just have another suggestion for the woman looking to place the kittens. I recently found a bundle of kittens on the side of the road somebody had dumped there. So I've been working with Kitten Angels, I think your doctor mentioned, but if people can look them up in their area, they are wonderful to work with.
Okay.
Great. Yep. Kitten Angels is one of the first ones I thought of, but unfortunately, sometimes they get full, too. So.
Well, Beth, thanks a lot for that. Julie in Northampton. Julie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 9-year-old Dijon, and she's been having leaky bladder, so she's on medication for that. When I was at the vet the last time, he wanted to check her urine to make sure she didn't have an infection. When they spun it down, they said there were signs that there was bacteria. So they put her on an antibiotic and did a 72-hour test. The 72-hour test came back clean, and they told me to continue with the antibiotic. And I was questioning why I would continue with an antibiotic if you didn't have an infection.
Well, it's what they were checking to see if the antibiotic was working?
No. So she went on the antibiotic that day after they took the urine sample.
Right. But then they checked the urine again 72 hours later?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, they did. They said it was a 72-hour test, so I would get the results in 3 days.
Oh.
And they came back clean. But they wanted her to be on the antibiotic.
Just to be on the safe side?
I'm assuming they did a culture.
Okay.
Would be the 72-hour test, because that usually takes about 3 days. So, you know, urine cultures don't always grow. The bacteria doesn't always grow.
Yeah.
So a negative urine culture, you know, makes it less likely that there's infection. But if they saw bacteria in her urine, and honestly, Bichons as a breed are more prone to having bladder issues, I would use the antibiotics up. Just be on the safe side.
Julie, thanks a lot. I think that's about it. Well, doctor, that was fun.
That was quick.
Yeah. And when is the big run?
Oh, not until January.
So you have time to train?
Yes.
So it's tough with a bad knee to do that, right?
No, actually, well, my knee's all better. I'm just not allowed to do, you know, 20-miler training runs anymore.
Yeah, because 13 miles is such a short trip. All right, very good. Well, thanks a lot for being here. We'll see you next time. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting a gender-bending Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, staged in an all-girls prep academy, November 12th through 22nd, newpaltz.edu/theater. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook at 866-WASH-WAG. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting William Joyce, Guardian of Childhood, an exhibition of Joyce's original illustrations for his books and films, and monthly programs highlighting his work, arkellmuseum.org. At Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a homestyle bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. Thanks again to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Thanks to you for listening and for calling. Thanks to the great Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach and our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the Gardening Show. Stay tuned now for news.